Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
Been a long time since we've been able to look out in the garden and see things growing. And while most things are still dormant, obviously, the time's coming. Spring blooming bulbs and other plants are going to be popping up. And if you're like me, you're really ready for that. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for another edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Really happy to have Karen Johansson back with us. She worked for many years, forever, in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. And she can answer a whole range of gardening questions. And so I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And you can also post photos there if you want. And Karen, it is great to have you back.
Oh, well, thank you. It's great to be here. I have to dust off my brain.
It's been a while, but I really am glad to have you here. You know, and our northern listeners just got hit by another big old snowstorm. Some of us got a lot of rain this week.
Yeah.
Snow's almost gone in southern Wisconsin, or at least parts of it. What are some of the first bulbs we're going to see flowering?
Well, you know, I've been looking around our neighborhood, and I actually posted something on our Facebook page. There just isn't a whole lot blooming yet. I mean, we're not really even seeing the crocus yet, so things are going to be late. I've got a few daffodils that are just peeking out of the soil. Yeah. So we'll start seeing our early things. And but things are, boy, you know, yeah, several weeks late, and there's still a lot of frost in the ground, obviously. Yeah. I was talking to someone that's doing a build project, and they're finding frost still 4 feet down.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so it's going to take a while for things to thaw out.
Well, if we get another cold snap or we get some more snow or ice, is there any way to protect those plants that have already emerged?
No, you know, and that's the natural thing. They're supposed to be coming up now and things are late, so I would just let things happen. You know, the only thing I would say is if we finally do, when things start to get ready to bloom or the flowers are just cracking open, if we get some really cold temperatures, freezing temperatures, throw a box over them for the night. But for right now, no, just let things come as they will, because things are late anyways.
Yeah, and of course we're going to hold off, obviously, on fertilizing or anything like that for...
Most definitely. And, you know, the ground still has frost in it. There's still a lot of puddles. So as we start seeing things thawing out in our yards, then we can think about getting in there and raking lightly and putting some early fertilizer on. But most years by April 1st, we're out there doing that. But this year, we just need to sit back and wait a bit.
Yeah. You know, it's almost, I think everybody's kind of desperate to see a little color out there.
Yeah, that's right. We sure are.
Those early bulbs are really welcome.
Yes.
Can you also be thinking about planting bulbs in spring?
Well, yeah, not outside, of course, but right now you would be putting in things like the tuberous begonias, and those are wonderful. They're large bulbs that you plant, and they just have enormous flowers. You know, sometimes they're 2-3 inches across. Caladiums, the elephant ears, dahlias. So all those things you could be starting right now in the house in a nice sunny window, and maybe supplementing with a little bit of extra light as well. Starting seeds right now, it's a good thing to be doing that too.
All right. Well, we have every one of our phone lines is filled. Maybe we
Great.
Should go to the phones.
All right.
Let's go to Robin in Eau Claire first. Robin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I'm going to be moving this summer, like in June, from the Eau Claire area, which is still under a foot of snow, to the Superior area, which is under 2 feet of snow.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, how do I transfer my bulbs, which include daffodils, irises, crocuses?
Well, for the daffodils and the crocus and the tulips, you know, they're going to come up and bloom. And when they're finished blooming, you're going to want to take the flower heads off and allow those leaves to keep growing until they yellow. Now, most years by June, you would be fine, and you just dig them up and you'd move them because the leaves would be finished growing. This year, things are going to be so delayed that they're probably still going to be in the middle of their growth period, depending on, you know, what time in June. So if the leaves still are growing green, you know, dig them up, but try to get them replanted as soon as possible and water them in so that they continue growing to refurbish for their flower for next year.
Yeah, good points. Good luck, Robin. Thank you. Eric in Galesville. Hello.
Tony, I was wondering if, like, if I put some bulbs in the midsummer, would they take off and bloom in the fall then?
Well, typically your summer blooming fall bulbs, like your lilies and your dahlias and your gladiolas, those you plant more in the spring. And typically, other than the lilies, they're what are called non-hardy bulbs, meaning you plant them in the spring. You can give them a little head start in the house if you want to. And then you dig them up in the fall after we get frost and you bring them in because they won't survive a Wisconsin winter. Now, the exception on that, of course, is the lilies. But those you can plant in the spring and they will continue to winter over every year. But typically the ones you plant in the summer, you'll have to dig up in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, because we were having a September wedding and we wanted red flowers. And
well, for that, what I would do is plant some annuals, things like if you have sunny areas, you know, like your geraniums and, you know, patience for shade. I would go more with the annuals to plan on having flowers for a September wedding.
Yep. There you
geraniums
go.
And patience?
Yeah, depending on, you know, do you have sun or shady area? For sunny areas, you know, there's lots of things. You know, geraniums come to mind for being red. And you'd have things like salvia and things that'll bloom all summer. I wouldn't be planting bulbs for that. I don't think you'd be able to time the flowers good enough to make sure that you're going to have color for your wedding on that particular day.
Yep.
Okey-doke.
All right.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Patricia in Madison, thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry.
Hi.
Exciting to see some of my bulbs coming up like Karen is. But over the last couple of weeks, I've noticed that my yews are brown, while the arborvitae and junipers are dark green.
Yeah, the yews, you know, it seems like every single day they seem to be more brown, and I'm beginning to get really worried that some of them have just winter killed. So I think that's going to be a wait and see. The next few weeks are going to be telling. If you just do have the typical winter burn, that you can just snip off, and the good news is yews will regenerate from the wood. I'm afraid some of them are so brown that we might have seen some actual winter kill, and it's just going to be a wait and see. You can scrape the bark, see if it's green underneath, and see what's going on. But I agree, they are literally browning up a little bit more every day in my neighborhood. Make sure you keep them watered, too, depending on what we get for weather now. You know, now that the snow has melted, you know, watch. If we don't get a lot of rain, make sure you're supplementing and starting to water as soon as our ground thaws out. Obviously, we got to wait for that.
Mahalo.
Thanks, Patricia. Patricia joined us on our trip to Hawaii.
Oh, nice.
So it was good. I recognized her voice right away. Thanks again for calling, Patricia. Veda in West Allis, it is your turn. Hi, Veda.
Hi, I'm calling because it's a totally different question. Mm-hmm. I was awarded a 20 by 20 community garden here in West Dallas, and I also have garden areas in my yard, and I was wondering, what do you think would be the best plants to plant in a garden away from my home where I can't watch it or water it necessarily regularly like I can here at home, and for safety issues too, like what are plants people aren't likely to steal or vandalize or whatever.
Boy, that's a tough question. You know, it just really depends on what the weather does. I mean, once you get things established, like your tomatoes and your peppers, you know, a lot of times you only need to water them good, you know, once a week. So if we have rain, you don't need to worry. Some of the root crops, like potatoes, you know, you might get by with less maintenance. Carrots, you know, onions, those are things you can put in a little bit earlier. But
what
as far
corn
as
corn and pumpkins and watermelons?
Well, those are all things that need a lot of room. Corn is great, but just know that you got to put in a lot of corn to actually get a lot of yield. Pumpkins are good. 20 by 20, you have a really big plot. They work well, but just know that they take a lot of room. So, you know, just...
I have this really great variety of corn. It's called jewel or gem corn.
Uh-huh.
And they look like little purple and green and yellow and red and pink. And they're so beautiful. And they're an heirloom crop. And I grew four of those in my backyard last year.
Uh-huh.
And I got enough stalks of corn to harvest the seeds. Now I have a couple thousand seeds, so now I want to plant some of those and then give those seeds away.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, and corn is typically, you know, pretty low maintenance, so that might be a good choice for you, sure.
Yeah. And,
well, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, there's lots of ways to, I mean, she could plant the whole thing to corn if she wanted, but I would expect you'd want some tomatoes in there and potatoes. Tell you what, potatoes, onions, carrots, those are probably less likely to disappear.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Some of the things that are underground, beets, rutabaga, all that kind of root crops, you know, people aren't going to see them and maybe be so likely to swipe them.
Yeah. Tomatoes, nice, big, red, and juicy are sitting right out there for picking. So the root crops, that was a very good idea. Julian Nakusa, hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a daycare and preschool,
mm-hmm.
and we would like to start some plants from seed with the kids that would be blooming and nice for Mother's Day gifts.
Well, I don't know that you're going to have anything that from a seed right now that would be blooming because we're only, 5 weeks away from or 6 weeks away from Mother's Day, so it's quickly approaching. But, things that might be fun that you'd actually have some nice greenery would be some of your herbs. You know, they pop up pretty fast. To worry so much about flowers. The other thing that you might consider is doing things like getting some things that are already at the nurseries like pansies and maybe painting some clay pots or something like that that the kids mm-hmm. could work on and put some flowers in.
Mm-hmm.
What about for next year? When should we plant something?
Well, do you have a lot of sun?
We have some sunny windows. Yeah.
Well, usually things actually flower, you're going to need more like I would say 8 to 10 weeks to actually be blooming. And so that's going to be a little bit tougher to actually have things that are going to be flowering.
Zinnias?
Zinnias are really fast. That would be a good choice. And, those would definitely be up and going. You know, they probably won't have flowers on them, but you definitely would have a nice little plant for Mother's Day.
Or I actually like the idea of the herb or a little herb garden.
Well, that's
with
what
a
I'm thinking, the little herbs.
Herbs.
Yeah, if you do some basil and some parsley and maybe some leeks or little chives or something like that, then you don't have to worry so much about having the real highlight to get the flowers either because you'll have, some nice little greenery that they can snip.
And then they can eat it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for calling. Or, Judith said maybe Father's Day.
Yep.
You could get something flowering for Father's Day, Julie. That'd be another option. Thanks a lot for calling. Molly in Duluth, it is your turn. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Thank you for everything. I'm curious about the nicotinoids, and I'm worried about bees and other pollinators because the nicotinoid is an insecticide, and I'm worried about buying plants from a nursery like alyssum and impatiens, both of which I plant. And should I ask the question of the nursery, or would they even know? And does it make a difference?
Well, most of your nurseries, unless they have things that are organically grown, but even organics, they'll use pesticides too. Some of the nurseries that grow their own things, you might be able to ask what types of pesticides are used. I am not an expert at all on the nicotine-based pesticides. That's something I'm just not familiar with. We didn't use them. So I really can't even answer that question as far as those specifically. I'm sorry.
In terms of when, in terms of residual, that's probably what you're worried about, right, Molly?
Well, I don't want to be doing harm to the things that we all need, like
sure.
bees.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not familiar at all with the nicotine-based pesticides. It's not something that I used at all.
Maybe one of our master gardeners is listening in, who's give us a call and or can research it for us quickly. And
I mean, we used a lot of pyrethrin based, and we used a lot of things like that there was some residual on. And depending on when you buy them, usually the bees you have to be most worried about because the flowers. And a lot of times when you buy your annuals and things are not even blooming yet, so that you wouldn't need to worry so much about if you're not using the pesticides in your own gardens. But, you know, just again, there's just so many things out there, and I would just ask the nursery where you purchase them, and they may or may not know for you.
All right. Thanks, Molly. Thank you for calling. We are talking about all things in the garden today with Karen Johansson, who worked for so many years in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses of Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we're going to talk gourds with our gourd girl, Terry Schmidt. That's coming up on Garden Talk next week. Right now, though, we're getting some great information about getting your garden in shape with Karen Johansson. And we have callers online. The number to call, I actually have one open line. So that number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Cheryl in Fox Lake, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is, I'm looking for a quick fix to improve my soil quality. Last year, we added ashes from the fireplace to it, and it got very hard pan and didn't drain well. And so instead of going the compost route and waiting for something to compost, I'm looking for maybe something I can buy that would be a good additive that would be nutritious to the soil and would improve the soil quality and drainage.
Yeah,
well, depending on how hard the soil is, you might be better off, you know, actually trying to remove a little bit of it, 3-4 inches, and then put in some amendments. And for the amendments I would use would be peat moss and composted leaves. You can buy, there's really good sources now of composted leaves, and if you didn't do your own composting. And the peat moss and the composted leaves are going to be your best things. Also composted cow manure. And those things are going to work nutritionally, but better. And more importantly, they're going to be for structure. You know, the wonderful thing about composted leaves and peat moss is that they will hold moisture, but yet they allow drainage. And when you're working your soil, you want to be really careful not to go in and do a lot of digging and a lot of rototilling until it's dry enough to be worked. And by that, I mean you should be able to gently take and squeeze a handful of soil, and it should crumple. If you squeeze a handful of soil and you just get a mud and it's really wet, you need to stay out of your garden, because otherwise what you're going to do is actually break the soil structure. It's kind of like scrambling an egg. Once you scramble the yolk and the egg white together, you're never going to get it back again. And that's what happens if you work really wet soil. So wait till things dry out and then add, 2, 3, 4 inches of peat moss and composted leaves. And like I said, you can buy those at area garden centers. You also can get composted leaves at some of the areas in Dane County at some of the compost sites. And then as far as
thank you.
And one other question too about the nutrition, I would also do a soil test, and you can test for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And I think the tests are like $16-$17. You just get a little bag, it has the instructions, you can send it off to the soils lab, and that would give you a really good idea for your soil nutrient value.
There you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Yeah, I don't think we use the soil in testing enough.
Yeah, so. It's really hard to know the nutrition of your soil. It's kind of like looking at a person trying to decide what their blood pressure is without actually testing it. And you're going to find out a lot of things. And most soils, if you've been fertilizing over the years, you end up probably just needing nitrogen because the phosphorus and potassium both leach. And the nitrogen leaches so much, and the phosphorus and the potassium don't leach. So a lot of times all you need to add is nitrogen, which is the first number on your fertilizers. But without testing, it's kind of hard to know.
Absolutely. And if you tell them when you're testing what you're going to be growing,
if you're going to be growing vegetables or perennials or whatever. And you know, some things are real, you want a lot of nutrition right in the top couple inches, things like your annuals that tend to be more shallow rooted, whereas your perennials, you need to dig down and prepare your beds, you know, down like about a foot, because a lot of them are more deeply rooted and they're not quite as hungry of plants as what your annuals can be.
Al in the Coosa. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was wondering, is there any chance, like if, say, you use treated lumber, it's from an old fence, where it's been stained and things like that, if a person plants the vegetables in there of the whatever chemicals leaching back in the vegetables?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk of that, and I would be leery of that, and I'm not an expert on that, but especially wood that was treated like with arsenic and those things, so I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't, yeah, and not for things you're going to want to eat. I think that'd be a little worrisome.
Might be, you know, I was trying to think, is there a way that you could line the, yeah, I guess.
Because you need the drainage, so I don't know. Yeah. But there are definitely some problems that could be involved with that.
Let's turn to Mary Lou in Madison next. Mary Lou, hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks. I have an indoor question. Mm-hmm. I have a barrel cactus, which is 50 years old.
Oh, wow.
And it's bright green, and it's got the really beautiful golden spikes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a foot tall. And at the top, it's nice and round and looks really healthy. But as it has grown, it's gotten narrower and narrower. Mm-hmm. So now the top is like 6 inches across, but at the base where it's going into the soil, it's only about 3. And it's leaning, I mean, like, you know, the yeah. Tower of Pisa. And so I was wondering if there's anything I can do to fix the lean and to make it bulk out at the bottom or, what I should do about that, if anything.
Well, that's just purely a light thing. You know, in a home situation, they're not getting as much light. What I would do is after, you know, it warms up significantly and, you know, we have, you know, more like the end of May, beginning of June, perhaps put it outside for the summer. But don't stick it out all of a sudden in the hot sun or you're going to burn it, and do it like kind of in a semi-shaded area. And a lot of times just all the air circulation and the good light, and plants just love it for the summer. Make sure you bring it in again before it freezes. The leaning's tough, you know, and a lot of houseplants, we tell you, just take them out and repot them and kind of stand them up. But the problem is with the cactus, they just don't have a lot of roots on them. So I think if you try repotting it, you're just going to have a worse problem. So I would just maybe try staking it if possible.
I would stake it.
Because you just, yeah, I don't think you're going to have a lot of success trying to do much with it other than that. But, you know, put it in the sunniest window you have, and then once we get some warmer weather, put it outside for the summer, kind of in semi-shade, though. Don't burn it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I was thinking back to a cactus we had that was in the house. It was, 18 feet high.
Oh, my goodness.
It got that big? I mean,
18 feet? What kind of ceilings did you have?
Well, we had ceilings that were 25.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So,
okay.
But I had to stake that. It was pretty big around at the base, but still,
wow.
When it's that tall.
Yeah. Well, and they just get weak, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that was after whacking it off once. I whacked the top off, top 6-8 feet, and started all over again.
Holy cow.
Brad in West Bend. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Hi there.
Hi, we just moved into a condo in the area, and we have a balcony now instead of a yard with a garden that we can have. We're trying to figure out what we can, type of vegetables we can plant in, you know, pots or something on the balcony. Any recommendations?
Well, what kind of sun are you going to have there? Are you going to have sun most of the day?
The building is aimed to the south. So our
okay, good. Okay.
Southeast, we'd have sun.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of vegetables and flowers that you can grow quite successfully in containers. The one thing to keep in mind, that the bigger the container, probably the more success you're going to have. And you're going to be looking at daily watering. So if you're not willing to be out there every day, I wouldn't bother. Tomatoes grow very well in containers, but bigger is better. Like I would say minimum 16-inch diameter for most of your tomatoes. Peppers you can get by with something maybe 12 inches in diameter. But then there's a lot of small, compact vegetables that are coming out just for containers. You can do things like, you know, do like a pot of like lettuce and different greens and spinach for early things. There's bush beans. There's compact cucumbers. So there's all kinds of things. So look when you're purchasing them, you know, how big they're going to get and look, you know, at the descriptions. Herbs are also a wonderful thing to do in containers, and you can continually snip them back and use them all summer long for cooking. cooking. And then,
okay.
Go ahead.
Can I plant more than one type in a single pot? Like we have some 24-inch pots.
Oh, great! Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could even. Yeah, you could do like a teepee. There's things that you can do that will hold sticks up, or put like a tomato tower in, and you can grow beans around the edge. Yeah, you can put several different things. 24-inch diameter is great. You could probably get by with maybe two tomatoes in that, or three peppers. You could put some, you know, onions around the outside. Yeah, there'd be lots of things you can do. And then, you know, just make sure you check your watering every single day. And make sure you're fertilizing a lot. Now, in something that's 24 inches, you probably won't need to water every day. That's a nice size container. But watch your fertilizing. And we usually recommend using water-soluble fertilizers because you're watering so often in containers that the nutrients are leaching out quickly. So most of those you're going to be using like once a week or at least every 2 weeks and follow the directions on those. But the fertilizer is very important for your vegetables and for if you're going to just grow some flowers. And there's tons of flowering annuals that you can grow beautifully on a south window if you're willing to water and fertilizing them on a balcony, and you'll have a lot of good luck with those.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And we finally have some open lines again, so there's a spot for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Cindy in Antioch, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Your show is just in time for my indoor-outdoor problem.
Okay.
I went to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show 2 weeks ago, and I purchased allium bulbs, allium sprengetti.
Okay.
I believe is the term, the name of them, and they are supposed to be blossoming in July. Obviously, I couldn't put them in the frozen soil, so I started them last week indoors, and now they're already popping through the soil. And they can't go out yet because they're not supposed to be blossoming in until July, and I'm not sure how to slow these guys down.
Well, I'm not familiar with that one. So this is a bulb you just got 2 weeks ago. So is it a hardy variety of allium? Because usually you get those in the fall.
Yes, I know. And that's why they sell all sorts of different kinds of bulbs at the show.
Uh-huh.
And, so I asked the fellow that was selling them what to do. And he said, just start them indoors in a nice deep pot. And then when you can transplant them outside, put them out. But it's too soon to put them out.
Yeah. Well, would you have someplace cooler that you could put them, especially at night, like a garage or something, that you'd put them in the garage at night where it's maybe 40-ish degrees and then bring them in the house during the day and put them in a real sunny window? Because I worry that, like you said, it's way too cold to put them outside. But once we start getting days that are, you know, 50, 60 degrees, you start setting them outside during the day and bring them in at night. And maybe that would slow them down for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll put them in the dark, cool garage at night.
Yeah. Yeah, and bring them back and put them in the sunny window during the day so they, you know, otherwise they're going to get weak if they don't get the light.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, great. Thanks for the answer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, thanks, Cindy, for calling. Gary in Fitchburg, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. You talked a little earlier about having your soil tested.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that you know what the fertility is. And I know I should, but I never have. But would you care to comment on these little electronic devices that you can buy? A lot of the seed catalogs have them, and the stores have them, and they test the fertility, they test the pH of the soil. It's all done with little electronic devices.
Well,
are you familiar with them, and are they worth the money? Do they do a good job?
Well, the little pH testers, you know, will tell you the pH, but I don't know of just a probe that's going to give you your nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Uh-huh. I don't think that's really going to be worth it. And pH testing is real easy and it's pretty cheap. Usually you can just get a little soil kit and you take a little soil and you shake it up and you look at the color. But your best bet is to just, especially since you're in the Madison area, the area garden centers, we used to have them at Johansson's. The soils lab from the University of Wisconsin would give us these little little bags, and it has all the directions on there, and you just take the bag over to the soil lab, which is over off Mineral Point Road, and then they can tell you, you know, it's like $16, but otherwise you can get little test kits. But as far as probes, other than for pH, that I'm not familiar with, no.
Oh, okay. That leads me to another question, because I went to a flower show this spring, and I picked up the envelopes that you're talking about. But we have our garden divided into six sections, 4 foot wide, 20 foot long, each section. Do I have to take samples from each of them sections and have them each tested separately?
Well,
how do I know if one section is the same as the other, the other, the other?
Well, if you've done different fertilizing things or you've grown different things in them, it certainly wouldn't hurt, at least for a baseline. But if it's,
or
you know,
do a couple at least.
Yeah, yeah, I would just maybe just do two or three and see how you do there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we try to rotate the crops around year to year and that, but I didn't know if I had to have each one. But like you say, if I do like even half of them, did three of them.
Yeah, I think that would probably be a good place to start. And then when do you like kind of turn the soil over and kind of mix it all up anyways at the beginning, or
well in the fall I usually spade it down a shovel depth, but then I dump leaves in it when I'm spading, and I try to do that every year to keep some stuff. And then I also get, and you mentioned it earlier too, over by Verona, the leaf compost area over there. I get that, and that stuff's fantastic.
Good, good. Yeah, that's going to help you a lot.
It's relatively cheap.
Good.
So, I'd recommend. We use that quite a bit. So.
Good deal.
Makes good sense. Thank you, Gary.
Okay, well, thanks for the information.
Yeah, and good luck with your testing. And for anybody else, there are soil and plant soil testing labs throughout Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. There are some public ones with the University of Wisconsin, but there are also many private labs that will do soil testing for you, and it's a pretty easy process. But for the soil and plant analysis laboratories, if you go to your county extension office or call them, you know, they'll supply you with those bags too.
Great.
Todd in Marion, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I want to plant sweet corn early, and I'd like to plant it in pots, and I had this vision of putting them in like pots and then putting them on a shop table. I can pull my shop table out in the daytime out in the southern exposure, and you know, it gets sun and I can water and everything, and then bring it back in at night so it doesn't freeze. And then when it gets, I'm not sure how high, I'm assuming like a foot high, I can transplant it and Mother Nature will take over from then. Is this doable?
I don't know. I've never heard of anyone doing that. I mean, typically corn, you always just direct seed, and I don't know how well it's going to transplant. I mean, you could certainly try anything, but that's a new one. I haven't ever heard of doing that.
I think the root structure, it's a problem.
I don't think that's going to work real well for you.
You can give it a try.
Well, I'm going to try a 99-cent bag of corn, and if it works, it works.
There you go.
I just we had fantastic corn last year, but it came so late, and I just want to jump on it.
Yeah, and this year, unfortunately, when you plant them out, you know, it's even going to be a little bit later because it's going to take a while for the ground to thaw out this year.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. So, good luck, Todd.
You know what? If it works.
Okay.
All right, yes, please do. Appreciate your call. Yeah, it'd be nice this time of year. You know, it'd be nice if you had a little greenhouse.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned this on the program in the past. I have a friend who bought an old boat hoist that, you know, fits in, you put in the lake and raises and lowers the boats. And he took the guts kind of out of the middle. And then he got himself some sort of visqueen or, you know, plastic and made his own greenhouse. And he gets this early start every year on his garden, and he gets a fantastic results.
Oh, wow. That sounds like fun.
Actually, yeah, and it's, you know, it's a nice, he's got a nice aluminum frame, and it works, you know, it works pretty darn well.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you see one of those old boat hoists and, you know, it's for sale, you might something to consider. Laura in Twin Lakes. Hi, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I'm looking for a climbing plant, hopefully that flowers in the shade. Could be a perennial or annual. or one of each, so that I'd have something established and something that would flower throughout the summer in the shade. I guess the main consideration is shade. So something that would grow from the ground to climb up my railing and up to the deck and go around.
Unfortunately, there isn't anything, not that I know of, that's going to flower in the shade. You know, that's something that, you know, if somebody would develop one, they're going to sell a billion of them.
Yeah.
You know, most of your flowering things, there's lots of vines, but they need at least a half a day sun. There's stuff like vining honeysuckles. There's wisteria that will grow in the shade, but they're slow, but they're not going to bloom in total shade for you. There's the vining hydrangeas. You might have a little bit of good luck with those, but again, they're real slow. Most of your vines are going to need at least half a day's sun to get the flowers on them.
Yep. Unfortunately, too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you and I could come up with one of those,
we could
really retire.
There we would.
Let's go. Thanks, Laura. Let's go to Randy in Black River Falls. Hi, Randy. Thanks for calling.
You're quite welcome. Good morning.
Morning.
I love this show. I got to say, anybody that wants to grow sweet corn, just wait till the ground is warm, 75 degrees, and then start planting, and then wait for a month or two and start planting it again. But anyway, my point that I would like to make is so simple. You go to town and you buy about maybe two or three little baby swimming pools. The small ones are, I don't know, they must be 8-10 feet in diameter, and you just fill them with good soil and you plant whatever you want in there and it will grow. And if it's going to get cold, put some plastic over the top. The next morning, take it off so that you don't scorch your plants, but it sure works great.
And how deep do you get those pools? How deep are those? I'm trying to think.
They gotta be almost, I'm gonna say maybe 24 inches at max, but you don't need that much.
Yeah.
To get things to do some of your vegetables, at least a foot or
Yeah,
or
even
deeper.
More than a foot and a half.
Yeah.
Foot and a half would be more. But you're right, Randy. Why wouldn't that work?
Yeah, and it keeps the ground nice and warm, and then you get a head start, because that's gonna be the big thing this year is getting the ground to warm up.
Yeah. Good idea. Thanks, Randy. Yeah, go ahead.
The good thing is you don't have to do a lot of weeding.
Right.
It's all right there. You got three little pools and, well, however many you want, but that works really great, and it's a lot easier than going and plowing up the ground.
Yeah, I can see that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Randy. I like how you think. The man's interested in getting good produce, and he wants to do it with the least work possible. That's probably what most of us want. Thanks again. Cheryl in Antioch, Illinois. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two Alberta spruces, the dwarf varieties, and they have winter burn, and I want to know if there's anything I can do for them.
There really isn't. Spruce, you can't prune a lot. I mean, you know, when they send out their new growth candles, you can prune them back a little bit. But unfortunately, on the conifers, they don't take a lot of pruning. I think it's just on all the evergreens, it's going to be a wait and see. Make sure you're watering them well, depending on how much rain we get once things thaw out and things start to grow a little bit. Do some supplemental watering if you need to. But, you know, you can gently prune off the dead stuff. But unfortunately, with conifers, you can't do a lot of pruning on them.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Some open lines get you on pretty quickly as we talk with Karen Johansson, gardening expert, worked for many years in her family business, Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Karen Johansson. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you've got some nice photos, we'd love to see those. You got some good garden photos? Give us a photo. We'll take a look at them. I haven't gotten onto my Facebook page yet, so I'm... I will do that right now and see if we've got any photos to any cool pictures to look at. In the meantime, Bill in Kenosha is with us. Bill, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Karen. Thank you. My question is about sweeter. I have good luck with my tomatoes and good luck with my hot peppers and lettuce. Grows like crazy, but I get spindly little plants, or they get tall and spindly on the bell peppers and never produce very well, and usually the fruits are bald.
Okay. Cutting out just a little bit, Bill. But you're having good luck with your hot peppers?
Good luck with the hot peppers. I got somebody trying to get in on this other line, but that's what the interference is.
Okay.
So, the bell peppers are the plants get tall and spindly, and the fruits have thin walls on them.
Oh, wow. Well, what I would probably do, are you growing them in the garden or are you growing them in pots?
Yeah, I've got about a 30 by 15 garden.
Well, I would have a soil test and see what your nutritional, what the nutrients are doing in there. But
okay.
I would think if your hot peppers are growing, that's a really odd question. And then you've got full sun, I'm imagine?
Yeah, it's a south-facing.
Okay.
The only
time
I have any shade is in the late afternoon.
Okay. Well, I would definitely do some soil testing and see if it's a fertilizer thing, or just put kind of an all-purpose balance fertilizer on there and see what happens. But make sure you have good drainage, maybe work in some peat moss or some composted leaves or something into your garden before you start planting anything and see what happens there.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Up on our Facebook page, Nancy said she has started corn and transplanted it.
Oh, good.
A few times, but you need to be really careful not to disturb the roots. So, I mean, that's a task.
Yeah.
Especially the main root, you know.
Well, I'm glad she wrote in, but yeah, I just haven't really heard of doing that. Certainly try it.
Alberta in La Crosse. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I would like to know how I can get my amaryllis. When you buy them, they always bloom because it must be heavily fertilized. But I never have luck with them to bloom the second year. And the other question is, can I put them out in the garden when they die, they died back now from winter bloom, and then let them die back again and bring them in, those 6 to 8 weeks or 9 weeks, whatever they're supposed to have, and then replant them and get them to bloom. When do you fertilize them, and what type of fertilizer so that they bloom again?
Well, it sounds to me like you're getting their cycle a little messed up. When you get your amaryllis in the fall, they come up and they bloom during the winter. You want to just cut the flower off, but you've got to continue growing those leaves all winter long, all summer long. So the fact that they've died back, that's your problem. You've got to keep watering them and keep them going and get them to grow that whole winter through the summer, and then you dig them up in the fall. So that's why I think you're getting problems with them not blooming again. So next year, if you still have the bulbs, do you have any green growth on them at all?
Oh, yeah. I have three of them, and they went through their blooming stage.
And did they send up leaves?
Like I said, I got two that never bloom when they come up. And I don't know when to start fertilizing them because they must be heavily fertilized that they bloom when you buy them.
Well, the main thing is to keep the leaves growing. So right now, do you have leaves on them?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, keep them in the sunny window, and sure, you can start fertilizing now with like a balanced fertilizer, like a water soluble. And then as soon as it gets warm enough, like the end of May, plant them outside in the garden and leave them growing in the garden all summer long, and go ahead and continue fertilizing them with something like a 20-20-20 water soluble, and you could put that on there every couple of weeks. And then when it gets colder in, the end of September, beginning of October, when they just maybe lightly frost or even before it freezes, then dig the bulbs up, cut the leaves off, and then you want to let them rest a good 8 to 10 weeks and then replant them. And they usually, typically shouldn't be so difficult for you. So I'm wondering if you're just not letting the leaves grow long enough.
Okay. Well, I will try that. Great. And then when I bring them in for that winter bloom, do I still keep doing that every 2 weeks, giving them that?
No, you're going to, first of all, dig them up like the end of September, and they have to go dormant.
Yeah.
So you're going to shake all the soil off the roots, cut the leaves off, put them in a paper bag, and keep them from freezing, but put them someplace cooler, like maybe in the basement,
Okay. And
let them rest 8 to 10 weeks. Then you start them up again. You repot them, and then, you know, water them just as they need it. Make sure you're allowing the soil to feel dry in between waterings. But typically for the fertilizer, it's just while they're outside during the summer is the most important time.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. And I have a second question. Mm-hmm. What about the soilless soil so that you don't get the diseases and that? Is that proved practical?
Oh, yeah. Most of all of the houseplants that we buy, I would have to say probably 99% of the things we buy planted don't actually have any dirt in the soil. They're mixes of peat moss and perlite and mainly finely shredded bark, maybe some vermiculite. So, yeah, most of all of our houseplant mixes now are soilless, and they work really well.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Alberta. I want to go to Lori and Krivitz next. Lori, hi.
Hi. That guy that had said something about getting swimming pools for growing vegetables. I have a lot of sandy soil, so that would work perfect here. But he didn't say about drilling holes in the bottom for drainage, but I assume that that's probably a given, right?
Well, yeah, you would have to. Yeah, otherwise you're going to have puddles in there. Most definitely I would drill holes in the bottom of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and my other question is I wanted to get some flight of butterfly irises, but with all the sand and it being rather dry, are those going to even work with my soil?
Well, irises do like really well-draining soil, so I think you'll probably be all right. Do you have a full sun area, at least 6 hours of sun?
Oh, yeah, lots of
that. Then you should probably be all right. But mix in some peat moss and mix in some maybe some composted leaves. You can buy both of those in bags, and that'll prepare your soil a little bit and help you out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Judy and Marinette, hello.
Hi there. Say, we've had a problem with tomato blight in our garden for many years. We've tried to put, like, weed barrier down and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We get nice, bushy tomato plants, and then they start from the bottom. They get, the leaves get spotty and
mm-hmm.
yellow, and it
mm-hmm.
works its way up the plant. So I'm wondering how to deal with that.
Well, first of all, you're not going to get it out of your soil. So, like you're saying, putting down some barrier so that when it rains, it doesn't splash the dirt up onto the leaves. That's going to help. Know that it's, like if you can move your tomatoes to a different part of your garden and make sure you wash all your tools, your shovels, your tomato towers, your stakes, anything like that, use like a bleach solution to kill that because they will winter over on those tools. Planting blight-resistant plants would probably help you a lot. Look at the labels and you know, try to get some of the plants that are more blight-resistant. You can start using some fungicides at the first sign of it. You know, that kind of thing. Try to keep water off the leaves because it's spread by water as well. So obviously you can't do anything when it rains. But when you water, just try to water the base, not the whole plant.
You know, we had a really good success at home, at my home, with straw bales. We grew tomatoes and straw bales.
I've heard of that.
And it was wonderful. I got no blight, no problems whatsoever. So you might, if you want to experiment, we grew three tomato plants on one bale, and then we had eggplant growing out the side and some herbs growing out the side of
them. So you just plant it right into the bale?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, there's a little bit of work to it. You need to water the bale for about 10 days beforehand. You put a little fertilizer down into the bale itself or on the bale and then sort of water it in. We had absolutely wonderful tomatoes. I don't know how many plants you want, but if you've got something like that, at least that gets the you're way above the soil.
Right.
You're way above the soil, so you're not going to get that problem. If you know, if you want two or three, or if you got a couple of bales, you could have at least a half a dozen tomatoes on two bales, straw bales.
Okay. So just one follow-up. If we were to leave that garden space fallow for, you know, a couple of seasons, would that blight die off or will that always be there?
It's always there, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And there's some really pretty good directions on straw bale gardening. You might just go online, just put in straw bale gardening directions.
Okay.
Because there are a few things you need to follow. But other than that, it was really simple.
Yeah. I've heard it. People had a lot of really good luck with that.
We had a lot of fun with it. Marianne in Germantown, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the wonderful program. It's really great. I enjoy listening to it all the time.
Thank you.
I do have a problem with my lavender plant. It was a beautiful plant when I bought it 2 years ago. It's a big one from the farmer. Mm-hmm. And the first year it bloomed like crazy. I live in a condo, so I can't have much on the porch. And it bloomed, and I bring it for the hummingbirds, too, because they like that. What happened was I brought it in during the winter, and it started putting out all these little thin, spindly things.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, like, dried out at the base in some parts. And I brought it in this year. It did the same thing. Right now it's got the little spindly things on it all over.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do for it if it's...
If it's a goner. Well, spindly, is it not getting enough sun?
Right, not getting enough sun. And I would cut it back a little bit. Try to grow it in a cooler area if you can. Lavender's hard to grow in the house just because it likes cool nights. If some people have a lot of good luck, like if you have a basement window, for instance, mm-hmm. where it stays cooler. But what I would probably do is cut it back, cut some of that spindly growth off, and then once we start getting days that are at least 60 or so, start putting it outside during the day and bring it in at night. And see if that helps it a little bit.
Should go to my Facebook page, Marianne, and take a look at my photos from Hawaii, because one of the places I took photos of was at a lavender farm that we visited that was absolutely wonderful. The lavenders, all of the different lavenders they had growing there were just fabulous. And then they served us a meal. Lavender, everything from lavender sandwiches with lavender in them to chips with lavender.
Oh, wow.
And it was a lavender tea. It was absolutely wonderful, Marianne. So if you want to see a photo of a lavender garden, go to my Facebook page and say Larry's Photos of Hawaii, because they're in there somewhere. Oh, man, that was a lot of fun. Lavender, it's a great, great fun with that lavender farm. And always great, great fun with Karen Johansson. Karen worked for many years in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. And she's been doing shows with us for a long, long time. And it's always great to have her along. She knows so much. And always appreciate having her here on the Ideas Network on Garden Talk. Great to have you listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. So much fun to have Karen Johansson with us. Karen worked for many years in her family business, Johansson's Greenhouses in Madison. Thank you again for coming by. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's fun being here.
Lots of good questions so far. We've talked about bulbs, and we've talked about a whole variety of vegetables and flowers. You can join in with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Tammy had sent a note on Facebook. She's excited about the State Master Gardener Conference. It's being held this weekend at the Radisson Hotel in Appleton, Wisconsin. Been in that hotel. It's a nice hotel. She would love us to mention that, of course. So I thought, why not? We've got a lot of great master gardeners who listen in. You can go online to ocmga.net. It's hosted by the Outagamie County Master Gardeners. And Dan Himes of Terra Nova Nurseries is their keynote speaker for their end. He'll be involved in some breakout sessions, I think, too. Public's welcome. So I'd go online to the Master Gardeners. Just go online to Master Gardeners Association annual meeting, annual conference, and it's going to pop up for you. So, Tammy, thanks for pointing that out for us. And Stella in Sturgeon Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a suggestion for the guy who wanted to plant corn ahead of time and transplant it. My husband starts many of our plants in paper pots that he makes out of newspapers. And he starts all of our squash. And what he does is to make a large enough pot. The thing with corn is that it has a long, deep taproot that you don't want to disturb.
Yeah.
So if you take like a gallon bottle that has relatively straight sides or has a taper that you can pull the bottle out the top, take a full sheet of newspaper, fold it in thirds, and then wrap it around the bottle, and so enough extends beyond the bottom of the bottle to be able to, when you fold it over, it covers the bottom of the bottle.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mist the bottom of the paper. Don't dampen the top of the paper, but mist the bottom of the paper. Fold it over the bottom. Put the bottle down on a hard surface and press it down hard and kind of twist it, and then pull the bottle out. And then put that pot, it's not real sturdy for lifting, so put it into a tray and then fill it with soil and plant your corn there, and then you could just plant the whole thing in the garden. You don't take the plant out of the pot, and the newspaper pot rots. The roots can grow right through it.
Yep.
And it, you know, helps add good stuff to the soil, and you can transplant your corn without disturbing it at all. So And you might have, that should hopefully give you enough depth to be able to have the taproot do its thing and not disturb it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you did a nice job of explaining how to do that.
Yeah.
I followed that.
That's a great idea.
Thank you, Stella.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. So Stella's husband's got a good good thing going there. Although it's still, you know, you got to be careful. Let's put it that way.
But if you're not disturbing the roots, I think that's key.
That's
the
key.
Pots. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Liz in Walworth County, hello.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have quickly want to tell you that a friend of mine, an older gentleman who puts in a big garden every year, he doesn't roll a tiller or anything. He just takes his peat and puts that peat dirt down 2 to 3 inches over the top of the dirt. And puts the seeds in and waters a little bit and then lets the rain take over and he's good to go.
Well, and a lot of times, you're not bringing up weed seeds and all that kind of stuff, so that's a good idea.
Yeah, actually, the easy way to do it. Thanks, Liz. Julie in Madison, hi.
Hi there. I'm just calling, looking at these tulip bulbs I have sitting on my kitchen counter that I never got in last fall. Yeah, and I'm wondering, is there anything I can do with them yet to have them flower this spring?
Well, they're not going to flower this spring, but I definitely would get them potted. I'd go ahead and plant them up in some pots and maybe just set them outside. They need the cool treatment side. Their schedule is so turned around, but if you don't plant them, they're going to die for sure. So I would go ahead and pot them up, maybe even water them in real thoroughly and put them in the refrigerator for like 6-8 weeks to try to simulate winter and then bring them out and see if you can get them to bloom that way. And it's called forcing. So if the bulbs are still viable and they're not all dried and desiccated, that's probably what I would do is what's called forcing, is pot them up, put them in the refrigerator for like 8 to 10 weeks, watering them as necessary, and then bring them out. And by then you can put them outside and have them come out of the pots and hopefully they'll bloom for you. But
maybe
just cross your fingers and see what happens.
Okay. All right. Well, I miss your greenhouse too, Karen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Place. If nothing else, to look at the flowers as you drive along the
Belt
Line.
Yeah. We miss it too.
Yeah. And I love your show, Larry. So
thank you.
Thanks so much, both of you. And happy spring.
Yeah. To you as well. Thank you so much. Well, as long as I should mention that your greenhouses, they did close at the end of last summer. I imagine it was a little tough to.
Oh, it was very tough. Yeah, we were there since 1960, and our last day was August 4th. But we had a great run, and we were really lucky. It was a wonderful privilege, you know, being in the Madison area. We had wonderful customers, lifelong customers, and it was a great way to grow up. But my mom is doing well. My brother and sister were all retired, and enjoying it, and it's fun coming on the show though today. It kind of makes me dust off my brain, and really enjoying that too.
Well, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Jackie in Milwaukee has a question for you, so let's go to her. Hi, Jackie.
This is Jackie with a cold.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Jackie.
It'll go away the way yours do, Larry.
Okay.
I've got two transplanting questions.
Uh-huh.
I have a Carl Forrester ornamental grass.
Sure.
Ended up behind a big bush. Is it better to, can I transplant that? It's been cut down. Or should I just get a new one?
Well, you certainly could dig it up. As soon as you can get in the ground, you know, in the soil and work the ground, I'd go ahead and plant, just dig it up, get a nice big clump of it, and just put it in a nice sunny area. You shouldn't have any problem at all.
And the other one is a Korean spice, which will be a little bit more of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I planted it too far away from the house, and it smells wonderful, but I can't always walk out there to smell it.
Yeah.
Can that be transplanted next to a bedroom window?
Well, sure, as long as you have a nice sunny area. Now, with that, you may want to, you know, cut it back. You know, the problem is they bloom so early in the spring, so you might be sacrificing some flowers. But depending on how large it is, you might have better results if you sacrifice the blooming this year and cut it back when you transplant it so there's not so much growth for the plant to maintain. And make sure you keep it watered in well. And then there's a lot of nice transplanting solutions that you can add that have some rooting hormones and some, you know, a little bit of fertilizer in there that might help you out too to get it to put out new roots.
Mm-hmm.
And what if I wait till after it blossoms?
Well, you can, depending on what the weather's doing. Now, if it's cool, you know, that you're going to have your best luck transplanting things when it's still cool. So as soon as it's done blooming, you know, then I definitely would cut it back and move it right away, because once we start getting warm weather, your 80s and degrees and higher, things are a little harder when you dig them up. So the earlier, the better. I think you're going to have better luck.
We're going to get 80s and 90s.
Let's hope. I've got my fingers crossed anyways. I think.
Okay. And thank you. You've been on the program a long time. Always enjoyed. And you always knew what you were talking about. And I'm sorry the place is closed. It had to be hard for a lot of people. But you just go on doing what you were doing.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind of you. Appreciate your call.
Jackie, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to hear your voice. I hope get over that cold. Get over that cold. Okay. Jim, up next. Where's Jim calling from? Village somewhere. Village of Monona, is it? Oh, Merton. Sorry.
Hi, good. I have a question. I want to plant bare root apple trees on my farm in Elma, Wisconsin. That's 50 miles above La Crosse.
Okay.
Should I end any soil amendments? Should I improve the soil, like with peat moss or anything, or just use the regular soil?
Well, depending on what your soil is like, it's always good to add some peat moss and add some organic matter, like composted leaves. That certainly wouldn't hurt at all. And then whenever you're planting bare root, you know, just you need to do it early. I mean, normally we're planting bare root things now, but obviously we're going to be waiting a few weeks this year. But make sure you keep them well watered in, you know, misting them, you know, taking a hose and, you know, watering them down until they start to bud out is a good thing, too.
So how much peat moss should I add to each hole or what?
Well, I would mix it in. I wouldn't just add peat moss to the hole, but I would, like, dig a hole that's going to be, like, maybe twice what you think you need in depth and width, and then add some peat moss to the soil and just kind of mix it up so it's more uniform, and then fill it back in.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks a lot.
And a Facebook question from Danielle, starting several vegetable and herb varieties indoors this year using her own seed-starting mix, and she's got equal parts of peat moss, vermiculite, and perlite.
Mm-hmm.
She found the recipe online. Wondering, as an expert, what you think of that?
I think that's a really good mix. A lot of our commercial mixes have those three ingredients in it. And, yeah, I think you should do fine. Now, there's not nutrient value in there. So as soon as your seeds start coming up and they're getting what they're called the first true leaves on the little seedlings, start using a real dilute fertilizer on them and keep them well fed. Usually the water solubles are going to work best, but make sure you mix it real low strength.
Nancy in Grafton. Hi, thanks for calling.
I inherited, I don't know, it's a fiscus or ficus or some
ficus?
Kind of tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's got this twisted stem, you know.
Sure.
It's about 6.5 feet tall.
Great.
And I'm thinking, it's like say, 13 years old, and I'm thinking, you know, I'll bet you that thing would like some new ground in there or something. Should I take that thing out of that pot and go and put new ground in? And if it should, what kind should it be? And should it be trimmed back because it looks kind of wimpy?
Well, I definitely would trim it back and be prepared on the figs. They have like a kind of a milky sap, and don't worry about that. It's going to be normal. And now would be a good time to cut it back. As far as transplanting it, how often do you need to water it? Is it more than once a week? Or
about once a week.
Okay. Well, as long as the soil hasn't pulled away from the pot, I would just leave the soil in there. I mean, there are some people that like to go in and change soil, so to speak, on plants, but I think you end up damaging the roots more than what you accomplish. So if your plant's doing well, I would just leave the soil alone. Just use a good balanced fertilizer on it. I like the Jax 20-20-20. It's good for just about everything. You mix it a little heavier for outdoor things and real light, like maybe even a teaspoon in a gallon is all you need to use for the indoors, but follow the directions on there. But definitely you could prune it back and shape it now would be a good idea. And then when we do get some warm weather, you know, the end of May, beginning of June, you could put your ficus out in a real shaded area so you don't sunburn it. And you'll be amazed at how the leaves will come out and how much the extra air circulation will do for it. It'll just love it.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot, Nancy. Valerie in Grafton, hi.
Hi there. So my husband and I are planning selling our house pretty soon, and the weather has not been very kind to our landscaping. We have some room out front and then some nice big flower pots, and we need suggestions for what to plant there and when to make it look nice.
Well, for your early things, for your flower pots, definitely I would get some pansies. They love the cold weather. I mean, it's still too cold now, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks you'll be able to put your pansies in. And they would bloom all the way, you know, into June until the weather starts to get warm. And then depending if you sold your house yet, then you could switch it into more traditional annuals like your marigolds and your salvia and geraniums and things like that. And I think that would give a lot of nice color, and they're real easy to grow. And there's just, I think the garden center should just start be putting those out now.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks, Val. And Donna in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about companion gardening.
Mm-hmm.
How beneficial is it, especially in the vegetable garden, to plant carrots next to tomatoes and keep your garlic away from the asparagus, those kinds of things?
Well, there's whole books written on the subject, and yeah, they're definitely good ideas, and, you know, for space, I think, as much as anything. So, yeah, and also to try to have your garden so you have something ready all the time, so you put your early things in, you put your later things in. But, yeah, there's some great books on companion gardening, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Heidi and Toma, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I have a very small orchard. We've got one cherry, a couple of pear trees, a peach tree, and we've got six apple trees. But four of them have never bloomed, and they're about 8 years old. Do I give up on them? Do I replant them?
Some of them just start to come mature when you get more into that age. I'm certainly not an apple expert, but you're not pruning them, are you? I mean, you're not cutting off the flowers before they get a chance to open?
No. Okay. We prune late summer, early fall.
Well, I would not prune them and see what happens. I'm just wondering if you're cutting them back too far and you're cutting off the all the flowering growths, because they start to set those buds in the fall and then they'll bloom in the spring. So this year I would maybe just quit pruning them and see what happens.
Well, I've only pruned them once.
Oh, okay.
And that was a couple of years ago.
All right. Well, boy, I don't know. I would look. There's some really good bulletins on the EW Extension website and look up there and see. But
There are different tricks that people use.
Yeah,
you know,
and to be honest, I don't know the
answer
to the
question. Hit the trunk with a baseball bat.
Yep.
They do that, and guys have done that, and I've they'll take a knife and partially girdle.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm not even going there with the question because I don't know.
But there is a guy. I had a guy at the show. He said, I always take a baseball bat to it if I can't get him to. And he said that actually shocks him into producing fruit. But, you know, I haven't tried that yet
myself. Gardening tips by Larry. All right. I love it.
Well, it can't hurt at this point.
No, exactly. It'll make you feel better anyways.
You could probably go online and put in hitting your apple tree with a baseball bat and see what happens. Thanks, Heidi. Oh, my goodness. Dave in Wausau has been waiting. Oh, we lost Dave in Wausau. Well, that's all right. Let's go to an email from Robert.
who said, I heard you say that you should wash your tools with bleach if that and so forth. And he says, if that kills the blight, the mold, and the mold, can I just bleach my soil and kill the spores and then wait a while and plant?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Yeah, you're gonna, you won't be able to get it out of the soil, so don't do that. You're better off trying to contend with the blight. Unfortunately, there isn't any fungicides or any treatments that to get rid of the tomato blights out of the soil once they get in there. So, just trying to keep it from spreading around. Like for instance, on like tomato towers. You know, if you use them and you don't bleach them from each year, you just re-inoculate all the leaves. So sometimes even though you have blight in the soil, you can still grow successfully, especially if you do some mulching. Put some straw down or some landscape cloth or something to keep the soil from splashing up onto the leaves, and that'll help you. But no, I definitely wouldn't put bleach in your soil.
Let's turn to Emily in Eau Claire next. I'm sorry. Well, let's go to Emily in Eau Claire. Emily, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a first time gardener and started seeds indoors. The first time around, I started them in Dixie cups and they got moldy. So I started over, didn't water them as much, put them in. I made paper cups that I can put right into the ground then. And I have them in a greenhouse right now in the house that I have open during the day and then at night close up so it stays warm, and they're starting to grow mold on the outside again. So I'm wondering if that's just a horrible tactic and I should move on to a different one, or if they can be salvaged.
Well, I don't think a little mold's probably going to hurt them too badly.
No.
Just make sure you're not keeping them too wet. And, you know, when you're missing them and watering them, try doing it in the morning as opposed to night so the stuff isn't sitting wet all night. And try to increase your air circulation. You said you're opening and venting, and that's good. Maybe put a fan on into the room. There are some fungicides that you could dust on them, and that might slow it down. But I think a little bit of mold probably isn't going to hurt too much, but you just have to see. I haven't personally had a lot of experience growing in paper pots in the newspaper. I think it sounds like a great idea, but I haven't personally done it. But just watch that you're not keeping your stuff too wet. How do the plants look?
So I started the first time they sprouted. And then I went to a garden class, and she's like, well, if there's a lot of mold, like the mold was in the soil and everything.
Yeah, okay.
So I got rid of those and started over. And now, so they've been... I planted them a week ago, so they haven't sprouted yet.
And they're already getting mold on the outsides of the paper, huh? Are you using seed-starting soil? I'm just wondering where all the spores are coming from. What are you using for your soil media?
Just a potting mix.
Well, you might try getting a seed starting mix, you know, one that's just, that's a little bit more, make sure you start with a new mix that doesn't actually have dirt in it, something like a peat moss, perlite base mix, and see what happens. It's just weird that all of a sudden they're molding right away. You know, don't keep it quite so wet. Maybe let it dry up a little bit.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Louie in Park Falls. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I've got an area in my yard that holds water for a couple of days after rains, and I've tried different trees and over there trying to get something to grow, and I haven't had much luck. Any suggestions on what type of tree I might be able to plant there?
Not if you're sitting with puddled water. You know, there are some things. A lot of the willows like to have a lot of you know, weeping willow. They love to be wet. Sometimes you can get by with some of the natives will take a little bit more wet, but standing water, that's going to be tough. I think you're going to need to improve your drainage.
Yeah. Willows is about the only, tree I could think of, and not necessarily the nicest tree either to have.
Yeah, they can be pretty weak-witted, but I don't have a good answer for that one.
All right. Thank you for calling. And Jane wonders if she digs up her Asiatic and Oriental lilies this spring and then replants them, will they bloom yet this year?
Oh, very possibly, yeah. Yeah, just dig them up carefully that you don't damage the bulbs and move them gently. And sure, they should be fine. You can buy lily bulbs right now that are dormant and they'll bloom this summer, so I don't see why they wouldn't.
Perfect. Well, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been great. We've got so many different varied questions.
The variety of questions that we got in the last 90 minutes, I don't even know how many calls you took, but it had to be 30 or 35 calls.
I think so.
About a broad range of topics.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, you'll come back and do this again?
I will. Just invite me again. Yeah, it's fun. Like I said, I needed a good idea to dust my brain off not working to get the cobwebs out a little bit. But it's been a great time.
We'll have her back.
Karen Johansson worked for many years in her family's business, Johansson's Greenhouses, in Madison. And we'll have her back, and we'll do this again. Just to think ahead here, Monday, author Jacqueline Michard joins us to talk about writing for young adults. Her life, we'll talk about that in the upcoming Writers Institute conference in Madison. She'll be taking part in that. And then the weather guys come by to talk about spring and how this winter stacked up compared to others. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.